Hi there, Larry.
Hey.
How are you?
Andy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
From the Indiana Andes. I did not bring an instrument, so press the button.
When the people that you know don't like you and your treasured friendships end, tune into this podcast where your artificial friends.
Ah. I see. I feel official.
Yeah, we need that to actually feel like we can launch into the scintillating conversation that you and I are about to have.
Oh, it's going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
He's Larry Morgan. I'm Andy Chanley. Josh Fligger and Sam Farmer are on assignment.
Well, Sam's on a very
Sam
special
is on,
assignment.
He is on assignment.
Do you want to explain?
Can we? I don't know. Is that right?
I don't know. You know what?
You know, we might be violating the HIPAA Act.
He's probably, when he finally is able to return to us and sit for a while.
Because he's hovering in the stratosphere right
about
now.
I bet he's okay with talking about it
Well, yeah, we'll talk about it later. We'll pick it up with him.
Yeah.
I'll just say this. I'll say this much. I am proud of him.
Yes.
For what he's doing. And listeners to this podcast will probably put number two and number two together.
I'm sure when he gets back, he will spew the whole story
to
everybody.
Yes, yes, yes.
Figured it out yet?
Okay, we miss you, Sam.
Yeah, we do.
And you too, Josh.
I thought we'd go back and look at Your Artificial Friends, the Facebook page, because we always say at the end of these episodes, post things there, and if we have time, we'll get to them. Why don't we, instead of farting that away, why don't we get right to a couple of these comments? One of them,
yes,
this comes from the podcast we did a couple weeks ago, one called 7 Inches in Andy's New Gig.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a You Me podcast from last week.
Yes, just like this. Mm-hmm. And there's a question on here from Ronald Scott. I have a question for Larry.
Uh-oh.
Since you worked at Kiss FM in the 1980s, I was curious about Rick Dees. Was he always in Rick Dees mode, or was he completely different off air?
That's a great question. Because you are on it. He never stopped being Rick Dees. Never. I never was around him. I could tell Rick stories all day. And for a second here, you're going to feel like I'm headed there. No, Rick was always on when I was around him. But I just don't think he ever let his guard down. Maybe with his own family, he was a little more low-key. I never saw him.
Think he was, hey, Dad, what's the temperature?
It's 84 degrees.
Rick was always very presentational. I think he always felt like he had to be on. He had to be himself. I've told the story a couple of different times. There was one time where I had a little bit of a serious discussion with him, and that was when 1984-85, the LA Times did pretty much a hatchet job on him. He thought there was going to be this big fluff piece. He was the cover of the calendar section. And around this time, the calendar section was more tabloid. It wasn't like a section that I don't even know if it exists anymore. I haven't seen an LA Times paper in forever. But it was a cover story. And the centerfold, the gatefold of the whole thing was a letter that was reprinted that he wrote to the rest of the jocks at Kiss, threatening that they would be fired if anybody ever messed with his stuff, like his carts.
Francis.
All these different sound effects were in a very particular order. Somebody had moved them around,
wow.
And he was livid.
Really?
And so the article, which he thought was going to be celebrating who at that time was a massive success, number one, huge numbers, literally has not been equaled since.
Right.
Seacrest, Stern, anybody.
You can't take it away from him the fact that he murdered it.
Yeah.
He was really doing great for a long, long
had
time.
A really long, a good decade where he dominated. But this thing talked about they were focused on his ego and his temper, and he didn't know who leaked that letter. It was reprinted in the L.A. Times. They they copied it and made it center stage of that article.
See, you know, that's...
So I had just barely been working there for any length of time, and I had maybe met Rick in passing, and he basically stopped me in the hallway coming back from the bathroom. He was recording his weekly Top 40 one night. He was there late. Because he was also working on Solid Gold at the time.
Oh, right.
So he'd come back from a TV taping, was working on Weekly Top 40, stopped me in the hallway, and I'm on the air. I was like, oh, Larry, you know, did you see that L.A. Times article? I'm like, yeah, whoa. It's like, oh, I mean, who here would send that to the Times and, you know, throw me under the bus? And I realize he's watching me really carefully how I respond. And I'm going, not me, Mr. Deese, because it was. I wouldn't have done that.
Of course.
Absolutely,
you wouldn't.
I would have been there working months.
Perish the thought.
I wouldn't have. I was 21 years old and working at the biggest station in the world. There was nothing.
So you're pretty scared of Rick Deese at that point, right?
He was a hero at that point, and I wanted to be liked by him, and this is the first real conversation
with
him.
What year is this again?
Probably end of 84, early 85, something like that. So at that point, that was the last real kind of normal conversation I had with him. From then on, he was always very kind of elevated, and he was very much in that presentation mode. I don't know what that's about, but I do you know people like that who just kind of like can't turn that off a little bit?
Yeah.
Am I like that? Are you looking at me like I'm like that?
Well, it's something where, look, I think that, and not that I can identify with Rick Deese's success
nor can I
or popularity and nor can I psychoanalyze him, but I think that, well, two things happen. One, when you're a DJ, you give people a little bit of yourself,
right?
Depending on how tightly you're wound,
right.
How far the rod is up your butt. To be in control of everything. I gave up a long time ago much worry about looking stupid in public.
Yeah.
Because, look, it's going to happen. And the more tightly you hold on to that and try to control it, buddy, the harder you're going to get it. And the nastier the memes are going to be when it actually comes around and you get hit with that shit stick. So I kind of...
Yeah, in fact, you need to lean into it, if anything. It's I'd rather consciously make a fool of myself than have it be made of me.
Yes.
And especially in this day and age, because you do have a camera in your face and people, potentially, even if you're not famous, even if you're kind of famous like we are, barely famous, I think would be our movie, directed by Cameron Crowe.
Right.
You're still in the public eye in some way, and there's always something going on that could fall flat on your face.
Yeah. So I think there's some of that some people are willing to say anything. Howard Stern is great with that. He will say, whether it's sensationalized or not, he'll tell you everything you want to know. He'll tell you about the last poop he had. He'll tell you about the last poop his wife had.
Get the sense that that's absolutely genuine. That's authentic. That's just who he is.
Right. So I think there's that. I think there are degrees of transparency that different people who are on the radio have. The other thing is, how old was he when you met him?
Probably 40? Late, not quite 40 yet. He was still in his 30s.
Approaching 40.
Yeah.
So he had been in radio, ostensibly started, I'm guessing, in the 60s? Late 60s?
Probably is when he was younger, and had was his biggest success when Disco Duck came out, he was in Memphis.
Okay. Let me take a step back. He was born in the 40s.
Yeah.
In the late 40s. And that was still a time when you were selling the sizzle more than the steak.
Yes. And he came up in radio at a time where it was all about the sizzle.
Hey, it's Wolfman Jack! Playing the stacks of wax, the platters, the batter, pumping the water to your cottage, baby.
It was that type of shit.
Yeah.
And people loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And, even the boss jocks and all that kind of stuff. And it was larger than life that that went that sold with people, and people embraced that. And even with other things, I talk about this sometimes, you know, talking about changes that have happened in voiceover and society. Like, it used to be a cavalcade of stars. Terry, yeah. You know, it would just list all of these different people that were, involved in a movie. That was supposed to sell it. Or it was some larger than life, two young lovers on a road to ruin. You know, that kind of
shit. The most thrilling adventure that has ever hit the screen.
Exactly. And
I watch those promos on Turner Classic Movies, and they're all the same. It seems like they were all written by Donald Trump. This is the greatest adventure ride of all time to hit the...
Yeah. So then after that, after Vietnam, basically, when people were looking at their TV and they said, those newsreels don't make sense anymore to me. meet Judy. She's going to go to the homecoming with Michael. But first, she'll go over to Michael's house and meet the parents, have some milk and cookies. And then you turn and you're watching them count up dead on television. And that's when that disconnect started to happen. And people say, what? That doesn't make any sense. That's not the real world, that Ozzy and Harriet horse shit. This is what's going on in the real world. And after that, there was a huge backlash with the 60s and the counterculture, to the point where in the 70s, reality and authenticity started to become more important. And that's when you go from Donald Trump movie trailers to Don LaFontaine movie trailers, where Don LaFontaine, the guy that did all of the trailers basically from 1978 to 1998.
Well, up until he died.
Up until he died. And...
The inner world guy.
The inner world guy. And I met him one time, and I said, did you ever see Janine Garofalo's thing about why does every movie trailer begin with inner world, inner land? He goes, that's funny. I wrote that. And he talked about when he was in a movie trailer house in New York in the late 70s, one day their voiceover guy didn't show up, and they're like, Don, can you read one scratch track at least for us? We got to get this out. And he goes in there, and he says, in a world, in a land, in a place, two people. You know, and he said that was the quickest way to get you in it, in there, in this place where you could create your own authentic world. And so that was his device for doing that. So when you used to have very presentational Wolfman Jack radio DJs.
Mm-hmm. And that lasted well into the 70s.
A long time.
Until Freeform Rock and they were kind of the rebels, they actually took the mantle of the 60s into the 70s. Radio was very behind the times as far as that goes. The Freeform guys, low-key presentation, the antithesis of the hyped jock.
Exactly.
And
that
the hyped
took
jocks
over.
Stayed around for a while.
Yeah, you know, the Jim Ladd kind of, we're here doing headsets, and next week, and just not caring about the wow factor.
Right.
It's I'm going to suck you in by doing less.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a couple of those things happened, and I think Rick Dees was still, he was schooled, he was steeped in that old school.
Totally. Yeah.
And came of age in that old school. And that's why he always felt like he had to be that guy wherever he went. And more power to him. You know, he's somewhere crying on a big bag of money if this hurts his feelings.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And I remember one time when I was at the Sound, periodically we'd be asked to go out and talk to colleges, to students and classes that are studying communications. I remember going out to one, I think it was Mount SAC or something, and I'm out there, and I'm talking to this group of students who couldn't have given a shit and a half. But one of the things I said was, the most important thing I think you can do if you want to be a broadcaster now and going forward is to be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people come up to me all the time and say, "Hey, you have a voiceover agent. You know, can I get one? Can I? You know, what do I?" Because people tell me I have a great set of pipes.
Yeah,
that has nothing to do with doing voiceover anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, sounding. If you're a 79-year-old, piss burnt, Jewish grandmother, you are going to get all of the work that requires that casts an old Jewish grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
If you sound just like that, you're going to get all of that and be great at it. There are very few people that are a jack of all trades and can do everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just saying the best thing you can do is be yourself, be authentic, and embrace that and love it so that other people can learn to love it too.
I just told a radio class at Santa Monica College the same thing, because I think there is, for the handful of young people who ask about getting into radio, they kind of, it's dwindled over the years.
Didn't get the memo yet.
Yeah. But they still have this idea of what they think they're supposed to sound like. And that, I think that's all a trap we've fallen into, because I know you and I have both talked about this in radio. We usually had somebody that we were trying to emulate because it was the way you get started. You kind of affect somebody else's style or content, and then you'd slowly over time develop your own.
Totally.
With that influencing you, but you're basically stealing from all the best possible choices.
Everything I heard that I liked on the way up, on the way over here. But what was great was after I said that, there was a kid in the very back row. He's like, "I like Wolfman Jack, and that's who I wanted to kind of emulate." I'm like,
so, yeah, all right, well.
But best of luck. Good luck with it.
Maybe you can bring that back.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the very long answer to that question, I never saw Rick not be Rick. Capital letters Rick Dees. Although I will end that particular comment with this one. This is a story I think you will relate to. There was a time we had a party on a boat that was going to go do that little trek through Marina Del Rey. We had another like big ratings book, so they're going to have a staff party out on one of those little cruises that went around. And they had food, and they had booze, and they had some music playing. And Rick was there, and there was a group of, he was always kind of holding court because people gravitated to him. And I don't know if he was telling the story or if somebody had actually asked him, because by that time he had been doing mornings for quite a while since he had started back in Memphis, I think it was Memphis. And I think he said that somebody asked him, "Do you ever get used to getting up that early?" And I will never forget his response, and you and I can relate to this. He said, "You know what? Here's what I told him. Go to your kitchen, get a frying pan, and hit yourself as hard in the head as you can with it, and tell me if you ever get used to that."
Wow.
I thought, yeah, that kind of, now having done mornings a little bit, that kind of makes sense. Because it just feels like self-torture every time you have to get up and go to that shift.
I love the voice you take on when you do him.
Oh, yes.
Lanier.
Oh, that is Lanier. Ellen, that is how it is done. That's my other favorite story. For those of you who may remember, Rick Dees had a short-lived television series. I believe it was on ABC. He was a ten. They were when I guess Carson. Yeah, Carson was still ruling the airwaves. They were, you know, rotating through people trying to compete. Alan Thicke had his shot at it.
Right.
Rick. This was what Rick wanted to do. He was in L.A. He was the biggest personality on the radio in L.A. He was more famous than almost anybody else in L.A. at the time. And they figured natural progression was that he could host a TV show. And they launched Into the Night on ABC. It was probably a midnight or 12:30. They had trouble right up front booking any guest who wanted to go on that thing. So he was basically using whatever clout he had with Kiss and some of the musical artists. And this is my good friend Blair Garner, a country DJ who is nationally syndicated, who tells this story, that it was just a few nights into the first week or so when they had Lanier as the guest.
Who is?
Now,
kind of artist?
If you don't know the band Lanier, it was, let me see what Lanier is described as in Wikipedia, because I'm just curious. They don't even show up.
I I thought about getting some linears and my teeth went.
And I hope I'm remembering this story correctly, but am I saying it wrong? Hold on.
It's linear. L-A-N-I-E-R, maybe?
It was, okay, here it is. Freestyle pop trio from Miami. L-I-N-E-A-R. And it looks like linear. But it was linear. So sending all my love.
Wait, it's L-I-N-E-A-R?
Yeah.
And it's pronounced linear?
Yeah.
Do they know they're doing it wrong?
Their one big hit, if you can call it that, was Sending All My Love.
Okay.
And so that was it. That was who he could book in the first couple of weeks as the musical group. And according to Blair, they do their song, Linear. Here is this band that people barely know, have a top five hit, okay, that's something. And Rick comes out, and his response is, oh, yes, Lanier, that is how it is done. And that's the end of my story.
They were putting on a clinic that night. That's good for them. Good for them. Sweet Jesus. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think there are some people who just... I think they don't do it. I don't think he would do it. No, I don't know. But I don't think he's purposefully trying to be douchey about it. I think that he feels like that's what people expect when they meet him.
Oh, I think you could say this. I feel like you could say this about a number of celebrities who just there is a feeling that they do not want to feel vulnerable. And they don't want to disappoint in a way. It's like there is a presentational aspect to meeting anybody, and that it's probably a veneer. Oh, that is how it's done. To meet that expectation. And I think for Rick, it was very important that when people had an experience with him, even if it was coworkers, that it was the guy they heard on the radio was consistent with who they were seeing, you know, I think a lot of people do that. I think a lot of people in show business feel like they have to kind of hype it up out there.
Steve Martin ran into a situation where people would meet him, you know, in the early 80s.
Right.
They would meet him and they'd be disappointed. Or he'd at least perceive that, you know, they're like, you're not acting crazy or anything. Like you always do. And he's like, I'm eating.
Yeah.
You know? And so he had cards printed up, business cards, that said, this is to certify that you have met Steve Martin and had a most pleasurable experience doing so. handed those out to people when he met him.
Yeah, Steve Martin, the prime example of somebody who is nothing like his onstage persona in person. Very quiet, very introspective, not a joke machine. Robin Williams was somebody who, you know, especially after his death, people were saying he constantly... I mean, it was excruciating to him, but he had to kind of keep up that energy around other people. And he was only that quiet, introspective, very dark and, you know, troubled soul around people he was very intimate with. And, you know, so they're just people who are that type. That's fascinating to me. And, you know, I don't mean to be bagging on Rick, but that was an interesting question because it's true. That was a very upbeat, in-your-face kind of presentation, and he never let that down.
Yeah. And, you know, it's easy to take pot shots at people that are in situations like that, and you know, people, you're setting yourself up for that a little bit when you do achieve that sort of level of attention in the public eye. But, dude, you know, decades of success and was it Disco Duck number one?
Oh, yeah.
It was a number one Billboard hit.
Song.
And, yeah, like I said, he's got his feet up on an ottoman stuffed with $100 bills.
He did okay for himself. Yeah.
Larry, I was going to talk about another question, but for whatever reason, the comments have disappeared from and won't show up on this post. So I'll get them some other time.
All right.
I want to move on to something that's very, very exciting.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's something that's coming up very soon. It's a little excursion that I'm taking with my son, Silas, for his spring break. We're going to visit his Grammy. Is everything okay?
Yeah. Sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah.
That's what you were looking at your phone.
Yeah, it's just concern. It's just got a little family thing going on, but it's
okay.
All right. Yeah.
Do you need a hug?
No.
Okay. we're going on a spring break trip, and we are going to a mine. Sounds like fun. I know. But let me explain. There's more.
Yeah, okay.
Silas is...
Golly, I hope so. For Silas's sake.
He's crazy into gems, crystals, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
He loves collecting them. The main present he wanted, excuse me, for a Christmas present was a rock tumbler. Because he wanted,
oh my gosh,
he wanted to tumble rocks and you know, smooth them over and see what these different gemstones look like.
Yeah,
so hey, I love it. You know, he has a thirst for knowledge and discovery, and he's into this geology, this amateur gemology. So
fascinating.
I remember about 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I narrated some show for Travel Channel. And the series of shows was called The Best Place, Best Places, Best Whatever. And this was the best places in America to find cash and hidden treasure.
All right.
And, excuse me, they have this place that I talked about and I narrated the show. And it was about going to a mine in North Carolina where, and this isn't very, you know, ecologically friendly, I suppose, but they would take like a quarter stick of dynamite and they would shove it down in the side of a hillside there in coal country and blow it up, and it would blow out the side of this mine and all of these rocks, and they had these veins, these lodes of different gems, quartz and amethyst and, you know, some ruby and whatever else. All of these different stones could be found. They fill up 5 gallon, you know, pickle barrels, you know, 5 gallon pails of these rocks. You pay them for them, and then you go sit down in a, you know, this shelter house, and you go through each one, clean them up one by one, and see if there's anything of value in there. Whatever you find, you get to keep.
Wow.
And it sounded like a hell of a lot of fun to me because I'm dorky and I like that kind of stuff. So Silas gets interested in this stuff. And so I just threw out the idea. I've been actually talking to Laura about it for a long time, saying, hey, wouldn't it be fun sometime to go? And he's like, no, it wouldn't. Maybe if we have kids someday. Maybe I get to stay at the hotel while you did that. But anyway, now that he's
good
into
call,
it,
Laura.
The yeah. whole family
oh.
is going to go to a mine. It's in Southern California. And we're going to go to this mine, and we're going to get our bucket of rocks
mm-hmm.
and sit down and go through them painstakingly and see if we can't find ourselves a little tourmaline.
Is that something you want to find?
I don't know what a tourmaline is, but I'd love to find – you know what I actually want to find? I want to find a big honking piece of tiger's eye. Have you ever seen Tiger's Eye?
I have, actually.
Look up. You're right there in front of the computer. Pull up Tiger's Eye.
All right. Well, I'm looking at tourmaline first, a crystalline boron silicate mineral compounded with elements such as aluminum, iron, magnesium, sodium, lithium, or potassium.
Yeah, I knew that.
And
I thought you wanted, you know.
And it's quite lovely. Tiger's Eye.
Tiger's Eye.
Tiger's Eye is a chatoyant gemstone. Chatoyant gemstone that is usually a metamorphic rock with a golden to red-brown color and silky luster.
Yeah.
It's a member of the quartz group and the related blue-colored mineral hawk's eye. They gain their silky, lustrous appearance from the parallel intergrowth of quartz crystals. You guys are going to have a great time. Silas is setting himself up for serious disappointment with this excursion.
No. Almost everybody that goes finds something.
All right.
You find something.
All right.
We'll find some kind of thing in there.
Where
I mean, I'm sure they take out all the good shit.
And it's been hacked away at for, you know, years.
There are a few
mines.
Right.
You're going to find something.
There are several mines between here and, like, San Diego. There's they got the Pala mines, mm-hmm. Pala Native Americans.
I've heard of that.
And there's some of the Ocean View mines. I forget which one we're going to. Lara booked it all, but... we're going to go and hang out and see if we can't find
some. There are actually gold mines still in California, which is interesting.
Operating gold mines where you can find some gold?
I doubt it. I mean,
wouldn't it be great to find a big honking hunk?
I do remember going through my grandmother was a history teacher, and every summer when I got
I thought you were going to say your grandpappy.
No,
there for just a second.
No, my grandpappy was a hydraulic engineer or something like really fancy. My grandmother was a history teacher, and every summer or so, when I got to a certain age, there would be a reason that she would take us on a big car trip. Usually, she was going to some teacher's conference, or there was some other reason, but I would get to go. It was very much a car situation, not a lot of flights going around. Uh-huh. So it would be days and days and days in a car to get from Texas to Michigan, Texas to Pennsylvania. It was a long time in a car.
Yeah, that's a long time to spend with your grandmother.
And being a history teacher, it meant that it was every historical marker, every battlefield. And that was fine because sometimes those were interesting because, you know, Mount Vernon was great.
Huh.
That was amazing to see. I got to see some
where
stuff
George
around
Washington.
DC.
Yeah,
that was his residence. Yeah, that was beautiful. There were other things that were just outright snoozoramas, and I was in a car for a long time. I'm trying to remember what the point of this story was.
Taking trips to find
gold
things.
Mines.
Gold mines.
But there was. I want to say it was somewhere in maybe the Smoky Mountains or something. There was a place that did panning for gold.
Ah.
They touted that as a big deal, that you could still kind of find some of, you know, that there was still stuff going through streams you would go through. And I had a real fascination with that because I had heard about the California gold rush in history and all that stuff. And it was the worst, most boring experience I've ever had in my life.
Another place they have that I did in that show in, I think it's Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
They have the fields where there are diamonds. Like mm-hmm. they just rake up the dirt and you go out and walk along and, hey, look at that shiny thing. It's
a little
diamond.
What?
Yeah.
For real?
That have worked their way up through the soil. Yeah. You reminded me with the story about your grandmother. About a story. One of the last family reunions I went to with my mother before she passed away, like 7-8 years ago, I guess. Maybe a little more. We're going out there, and she was talking about a recent trip that she had taken with my father. They went on a drive. And they used to do that. We would get in the car and go drive for days, right? You'd stay overnight in motels and go and see different things around the country. And I was talking to my cousin Jim about a trip they'd taken through, I want to say, Kansas or Oklahoma, and they were driving through. She goes, and we stopped there at the Lawrence Welk Museum, and we spent the afternoon there. And then we went on to do this and that and the other thing. And then on the way back, we stopped back in the Lawrence Welk Museum and spent a little bit of more time there. He said, let me ask you a question about that. Why in the hell would you want to do this?
Not just once,
just
but twice.
He's deadpan. Tell me why the hell that would be a good idea. But yeah.
Well, everybody knows Lawrence Welk Museum. You can't get through it all in one day.
That's right.
You just
can't. It's like the Louvre.
Like the Smithsonian.
I think there's another Lawrence Welk Museum down near San Diego,
why
too,
would
off the
15. There be that?
He was beloved.
Ugh.
Absolutely.
Boy, clearly got around.
Well, and you know, I used to sign off in the afternoons singing Good Night, Sleep Tight.
I never listened, never able to listen that long.
Thank you for that. Oh, God. We used to have to watch that Lawrence Welk bullshit every Sunday night. Or was it Saturday night?
It was Sunday.
Sunday night.
Yeah, at least my memory, yeah. And that was standard in my grandmother's.
Give me five fucking hee-haws. before I have to sit through one Lawrence Welk. And now, Bobby and Sissy will dance for you.
Bobby and Sissy, I wanted to wipe that smile off that big old goofus doofus's face.
There is
some pretty great footage of the Lawrence Welk show's attempt to get into contemporary music they were trying to expand their audience.
The time they did Nirvana, it was...
No, you're making a joke. There is, however, a cover, I am not kidding, this is real, of One Toke Over the Line by Brewer and Shipley that they did on the Lawrence Welk show.
Oh, that's
where they're
great.
Clearly not thinking about what they're saying.
I can't wait.
It's pretty fantastic. Go Google that right now.
And after you're done with that, go and find the clip from when Betty White finally hosted Saturday Night Live. And I guess they did it a few times. But it's he's dressed up as the music man. Who is it? It's the guy that did MacGruber.
Will Forte.
Forte is dressed up as like the music man.
Yeah.
And he goes to, I guess, a house of ill repute or whatever, but all of the girls are dressed up and he comes in singing these songs. And oh my God, Kristen Wiig.
Oh, with the baby hands.
With the tiny baby hands. I'm only allowed upstairs. And I took a monkey and I ate its guts and we threw it in the road. Oh God, it's so, so great. I almost pissed my pants when I watched that. The greatest thing ever.
The Maharrell sisters. The Maharrell sisters.
And that was supposed to be a send up of Lawrence Welk.
Yeah, that was, Fred Armisen actually played Lawrence Welk. Yeah. Yeah,
it was right.
They did the whole thing.
Good stuff. That's good stuff. Well, I have one other thing to update you with. Uh-huh. Did you have something that you needed to talk about today? Anything on your agenda? Because there's one thing this is kind of a big deal.
Is it more exciting than your big trip to visit a mine announcement?
Well, I don't know about that. Okay. Why do you have to belittle it?
I'm just trying to figure out, because there's only so much excitement I can stand in one podcast, Andy. So take it easy on me, would you?
All right.
It's a roller coaster of emotions over here.
Do you want me to go into this?
Yeah, go ahead. Bring it.
All right.
I can handle it.
Well, the last 2 days,
mm-hmm.
2 days ago,
yeah,
I began to dismantle the steel shed that was in my backyard.
Oh, now you've got my attention, mister.
And then,
yes,
the following day, yesterday,
uh-huh.
I completed the demolition of this shed. And
keep going.
Bundled up all of the metal, took all of the rusty metal and all of that, and bent it over. And folded it and put it in the recycling container.
Talk slower.
I can tell you a couple of things.
Yes.
One is that this was a spider factory.
Well, you should have known that was coming, right?
I've never seen so many spiders as I did when I lifted up some of that rusted steel that was in the bottom of that thing.
Do the little Irish jig dance of getting out of their way as they scattered everywhere?
I never saw the remake of Land of the Lost with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
But it made me think of the trailer where he has like 100 spiders all over his face. It was terrifying. It was arachnophobia in there.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah.
So many spiders in there. And, like, these albino bugs that were hidden under.
Oh, yeah. Just freaky looking things. Well, the great thing to know about that is that they probably dissipated and now they're all inside your house somewhere.
They've moved indoors.
Yeah.
Surely.
Mm-hmm.
Surely.
That'll be fun.
So I took all of that apart. It's mm-hmm. gone.
Yeah.
It is gone.
Yeah.
Now then, another thing I can tell you is we've lived there for almost 4 years. I found things in there that I did not know were there because I never ventured to go into the mass of cobwebs that was the corner of the inside of the shed.
Right.
And I threw away a shitload of stuff that if I would have taken out of there 4 years ago, might have still been worth something.
Uh-huh.
Like there was a tile saw, a wet tile saw in there. It was just a hunk of rust. I had to throw it away.
Yeah.
A pump for a burbling fountain. I could have had something. We could have been burbling.
Could have been burbling this whole time.
Burble. Yeah. Burbling. We could have been burbling
but
the last 4 years.
But not salvageable?
No. Mm. Yeah. And
any treasures? Did you come up on any tiger's eyes, if you will?
See, now you are putting down.
No. Did you find
the geology lesson that's about to unfold?
Okay.
And I won't have it. Have your fun after I'm gone, but not to my face, sir.
I'm asking, did you find anything in there that delighted
really.
You?
Not,
oh, okay.
Not much of it.
All right. Well,
did I find? There were some buckets that'll be helpful.
All right.
And a couple of, pots, but that was about it.
Follow-up question.
Yes.
Are we going to do the Your Artificial Friends Building the Shed episode that was promised earlier?
Well, I kind of doubt that you're up for it. And
are you talking about? What
are you talking about doing? Like a time-lapse video of it to post?
No, we had talked about getting together, recording an episode while you built the shed and we drank beer. I'm pretty sure that's what we said we were going to do.
So you guys are going to watch me build it.
And comment.
And comment while I do it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm up for that.
I think the listeners would be fascinated.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
All right.
Yeah, I'm down
if
with
we
that.
Can get the four of us back together again, I think that would be a great reunion show.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah. All right.
We might even be able
to help you.
I'm not going to hold up progress for that.
I understand.
I have to forge ahead I've got the opportunity.
You set the date, and if we're invited, I will move heaven and earth to be part of the shed building episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
because I think it will be a watershed moment. I don't even know.
Heaven. Now there's a clean concrete slab there.
Uh-huh.
And now I have to build a shed upon it.
Right.
Got to raise a barn, eh?
Yeah.
Right there on that spot.
Well, invite your brethren over and we'll
I've never done it before.
Yeah.
Which is
why I want to come see.
I feel confident that I can do it.
Me too. I am confident that you can do it. I think you have you're looking at me suspiciously. I honestly believe you can do it. We've established that you are a handy Andy and that you know your way around tools and lumber and measuring stuff and saw on.
Oh, I know my way around tools all right.
Taking an ugly turn.
Look at you.
I don't know why you're not. Look, you said before, be authentic, and I am being my fully authentic self right now. I'm right. Excited about the shed.
Well, it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. All right.
I'm shedding all over myself.
Okay. We have totally. This is.
The shed has hit the fan.
Are we going to actually post this episode?
I'd be shocked. Probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's in, man. It's happening. I've got the plans are up here,
mm-hmm.
right up here in my noodle.
He's pointing to his head.
Up here in my noodle.
That is a terrible idea.
That's where my plans
no,
are.
No, no. This is your immediately identify your first mistake.
Got plans
nope,
in my noodle.
Nope, that ain't going to work.
Yeah.
You need to put it on paper. You need to have a schematic. You need to have.
What's that going
to
do?
It's going to give you real direction. You trust your own brain to just do this freehand?
Yes.
Are you insane?
A little bit. No, I totally think it can be done.
Huh?
I think that I think there's going to be a lot of measuring twice and cutting once.
Right.
I'm not going to lie to you about that.
It is essentially just going to be four walls and a roof slapped on top. So I guess it's probably
here's the way I envision it happening.
Okay.
Can I just tell you?
Yeah.
It's going to happen up against a cinder block wall.
Yeah.
And so here, I've thought ahead with this part.
I'm listening.
It is hard if I'm going to have like 3 inches of clearance between the cinder block wall and the back wall of the shed.
Right.
That I'm going to, I'll take another step back. I'm going to drill holes in the slab and put in some bolt posts, right? Some lag, epoxy those into the ground. That way I can bolt down the foundation, the wood foundation,
yep.
treated wood, of course, on,
oh,
the,
yeah.
on the ground level there, because
duh.
Because that's, you know, my, it's going to have some moisture exposure.
Oh, yeah, moisture.
So I'm going to bolt that down, and then I'll build the walls up on top of that. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The back wall,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to completely build that wall in modular form, have it built and painted, and then put it up and bolt it in place, because you won't be able to get back in there in that 3-inch space after the thing, whole thing is built. So I'm using the old noodle.
There you go. There
to
you
do
go.
This.
All right.
And then I'll build the other walls. There's going to be a door in the front,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be like a door on your house. You know, I don't want like just one of those barn doors. I want to keep bugs and shit out of there. So it's going to be a water-proofed door,
mm-hmm.
right there. And then I'm going to level out the concrete on the inside, pour a little self-leveling concrete, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to smooth all that out and make it nice and tight.
Mm-hmm.
Drywall the inside,
mm-hmm.
and insulate it a little bit so it's, you know, not the bugs can't get in there and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll use that to put all of those big, you know, Rubbermaid tubs of storage shit that I need to get out of the house.
Yeah.
I'm going to stack it all up in there. And then we'll have I'll do A-frames, I guess, big A-frames for the roof, and then put plywood on top of that and roof it with shingles, and we'll put soffit vents at each end to get some airflow through there and keep it a little bit cooler. And then at the north end of it, I'm going to have like a 2-foot, 2x4-foot closet for garden things. So I can put in the garden tools, the rakes, the shovels, the hose, the and grass seed and different seeds for the garden and all that kind of stuff. It's just going to be – I mean, I think you feel the excitement growing from just the description that I've given. Larry?
What's that?
It's going to be great.
I pulled up YouTube a while ago. I've just been looking at videos and stuff. So
cats.
It's cool. It's just some really funny cat stuff on here.
That's good. Sounds like somebody who's jealous.
I
and you know what? You know what's going to happen here? You know who's going to hear this? Josh is going to hear this. And he, right now, he has his robe carelessly thrown open, listening to this at home. And he is so excited about it, and he wants to take part in this.
I'm telling you, up until the last 20 minutes, I wanted to take part in it and be involved as well. That was how long you talked about it, I think.
Well, I've got plans, and I'm pretty excited about it. But I think you can tell it's up in the noodle.
Yeah, you definitely, whatever you do, don't put anything on paper. You don't need to plan beyond anything that's already in your brain. I think you're on the right track. All sounds perfect. What? I can't be. You don't believe anything I'm saying today about the shed.
I know. I think you're being disingenuous.
Well, we'll just see how it turns out.
All right.
All right.
Well, all right.
I think people are looking forward to this.
You know what?
Yeah.
I think you need to be taken down a peg,
sir. Let me tell you, you are living the life. You're going to take the family to a mine, and you're going to build a shed. You've got basically your summer set.
Thank you, Daddy. Thank you for providing for us a shed and a mine trip.
After that whole ramble about the shed, I'm so much looking forward to hearing Sam describe his spelunking adventure more than what you... Hey, that's exciting.
Larry?
Yeah.
I'm going to say goodbye to you now.
I feel like...
How can people get a hold of you if they want to tell you how disrespectful you've been?
I feel like we're ending on a contentious note, and I'm sad. I wish we had a way of bringing it back around. I am on Twitter if you would like to yell at me at Larry_Morgan. Or for my supporters out there who are on the anti-shed front, let me hear from you, yo.
It's Andy_Chanley for detractors and supporters both. Get on Your Artificial Friends on Facebook. Go there and Beer suggestions, topic suggestions, comments, words of encouragement, any of that stuff is very well appreciated. And you can find me through the week on 88.5fm.org around the world, or you can download the app and listen to KCSN here in Southern California. And, of course, you can always hear Larry here on weeknights at K-Earth 101.
101.fm. And if you haven't yet subscribed to Your Artificial Friends on iTunes, please review and rate us there. It helps other people to find us, and share on your own social media for those of you who might think you'd like to hear, for some friends of yours, would like to hear two grown-up adult white males talk about sheds and old radio stories.
Yeah, tell a shed-loving friend of yours about your artificial friends. I think that's it for today. Yeah. I think there's been enough damage. At your leisure, press the button.
Yeah. Nice job, Andy.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Hey, that is how it is done.
You're such a bastard.
When the people that you know don't like you, and your treasured friendships end, tune into this podcast, we're your artificial friends.